Hello, shalom. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? I can't hear you.
You hear me?
I can hear you now. Yes,
You
can you?
cannot.
No, I can. I can.
Oh, okay. And I sent it as a video call if you want, but that's fine either way.
What do you recommend? Is it better with video? I can do video too.
It's better with video because of the you can see facial expressions and body language, but
Okay.
it's up to you. It's
No,
not that big of a deal
it's
either
fine.
way.
I can do video too.
It's
It's fine.
good to meet you
It's nice to
face
meet
to face.
you. Thank you. Same here. Thank you. I can't really see your face because of the background lighting, but that I guess is fine. You just
I
have to
can
see.
turn, if you want, I can turn the light off.
It's fine. It's fine with me. But however, if it's important for me to see your face, then I'm just telling you I cannot see your face. But if it's not important, then it's not. Then I don't need to.
No, it really isn't.
Okay.
Hold on a second. That should be a little better, but it's really not good lighting anyway.
Okay, it's fine. No worries. Yeah.
Okay. We're both recording, I assume. You're recording on your end?
Yes, I'm recording on my end.
Okay. And I'm also recording. Couple of questions that I had for you. You started to say something about the Zohar that you wanted to talk about it.
It's funny. I wanted to talk about it, but because I thought you were the one who mentioned the Zohar, that you wanted to study the Zohar with me, and I would prefer. Let me give you some background, because because of haughtiness, I didn't. When I started my teshuva, I started immediately with Zohar study because I thought, I'm a smart guy and I can immediately go to the esoteric stuff. And I was a bit misled, by people who told me you don't have to study Torah at all. You can just study Zohar, and so it left a. It seemed to me, I don't want to make the same mistake again. And if I had, if I were more humble, I would have been like Rabbi Akiva, started at 40 and then went and studied the Aleph Bet with the children. But I couldn't get over my ego to attend Hebrew lessons with 6-year-old, especially since I'm the only religious Jew really in a wide radius here that at least I know of. So with the exception, of course, of the Chabad Rabbi. So if it's okay with you, I would actually. For it to start, but just since I learned everything by myself, I would like to know that I did what I know that my building blocks are okay. So what I would like to learn actually isn't maybe not the Zohar, but I'll leave it up to you since you are the teacher. But to just to start with the basic letters to understand that I, am pronouncing this correctly. The only thing that I, so I tried to figure out how to because it didn't make sense to me that the letters. Some letters had the same sound because that didn't make sense to me just from reading Kaplan's Sefer Yetzirah. So I tried to figure it out. And as far as I could tell, the Yemenites are the ones who still had most of their original pronunciation because they were up to very recently never exiled. So I was starting to learn with that just by listening to Yemenites sing psalms. But I'm not sure. I'm still not sure I'm pronouncing the letters correctly or the vowels. So that's. That's if I could make a if I can make a request, I wouldn't mind starting just at the very beginning, just to know that I'm doing things right. Also, the order of prayers because no one taught me this. I just pieced it together from watching videos and seeing in there that I'm doing actually the right things. As I said, I'm really completely self-taught for like
That's
years.
fine. That's fine. When it comes to the Aleph Bet, as part of the series of classes that I teach, there is a section in the prologue of the Zohar that is really a midrash about the letters coming before Hashem and asking to be the first letter in the Torah. And it starts with the Taf and then goes backwards. And I don't know if you're familiar with that Midrash, but it's well worth reviewing as part of the ongoing classes of the Aleph Bet.
I have that book. Lightman has a book like that, and it's
Yes.
described in detail. Yes, I remember. Yes, it comes there, and they all make their plea, and then they leave shamefaced and so on.
Yes.
I read that a long time ago, but I guess maybe I should return to it now.
Well, I don't get to it for about five or six classes, so
Okay.
we just do go through some generalized things at the beginning, which will I don't know how fast we can go through that. That's all up to you. But for it sounds like we will go through it fairly rapidly. Let me show you where the handouts are.
No.
You're
May
familiar?
I, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. May I ask you who taught you this? Just so I know the Mizora, who was your teacher? Who was your rabbi?
I learned initially from the Kabbalah Center, but I left it after about 5 or 6 years. But I learned directly from Rabbi Berg of the Kabbalah Center, not just the student teachers. I also learned from them as well. And then I've learned from a number of sources. Rabbi Bar Sadok from Kosher Torah, Rabbi Sutton. Rabbi Ginsburg. I learn from many different sources, but I also have what is the overall approach? I have a connection where my intuition is fairly accurate, so I know when things are going in the off site, off kilter, off kosher.
Okay. Yeah, so I know. I see. Okay. Okay. And you are an engineer by training. Did I remember that correctly?
That's correct.
Yes. Okay. Okay.
That's my background as an industrial engineer and as an entrepreneur.
I have a degree also in industrial engineering. So yeah. So I like systematics, which you are. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I had also learned from Rabbi Sadok, and also from his books from Rabbi Ginsburg. I hope he's well. Now he had a medical episode. I think he's on his way to recovery. And Rabbi
Yes.
Sutton, I also was in contact with over the years, ever so often, because he was the one who translated Rabbi Kaplan's book, and I just discovered that purely by, I guess, by divine providence from a footnote. Yeah, I sent some people his way. But Rabbi Berg, I mean, I've never met the person, but the Kabbalah Center, I was warned about that many, many times. I mean, don't take the wrong way, but why, I believe you that Rabbi Berg is kosher, but why does the Kabbalah Center have that type of reputation?
Because Rabbi Berg was the first one in the late 80s and early 90s where he taught Kabbalah to people without preparation. He opened the doors to the wisdom without preparation. And that's why the Orthodox community objected and always talked bad about him. But if you start to begin to understand, which most people don't take the time to understand, there are two levels of Kabbalah. One is called Sitrei Torah, meaning the secrets of the Torah, and the other is called Ta'amei Torah, the taste of the Torah. The Kabbalah Center only taught the taste of the Torah, which is kosher for anybody, whether you have background or not. The Sitrei Torah, you need background. When I understood that, I basically searched for other teachers because the Kabbalah Center will not, and Rabbi Berg will not, never did, teach Sitrei Torah to anybody. The halakha about Sitrei Torah is it can only be taught one-on-one, and then only if the student is prepared on his own. So, in a sense, the one-on-one is more of a guide to your own study. And that can go into Sitre Torah if you like or not, but it will be up to you. And I can act as that guide. But that's.
You can or you cannot.
I can.
Okay, yeah. Well, I don't. What is? So you contacted me, which is an offered, which is something I pray for because that's what Rabbi Yisrael said that you should pray for a couple of things that you find someone who teaches you, which didn't happen for years. It's, and that the children find a tzivuk, that the Torah gets integrated into your being and so on. So I'm asking you. Why did you contact me, and what do you think I should be learning? Because I have intellectual curiosity, of course, from my background, and I have a sense of mission, amorphous still, but it's slowly crystallizing, just exactly in the order and exactly in the way that the Tanya would say, in terms of self-improvement, the things become clearer. I get the I understand. I can see at least general outlines of events happening a little bit into the future. The not with perfect accuracy, of course, but the intuition that I get, like you said, the intuition gets honed because the blocks are fading away. But that only means, but there are many people who had this and terribly failed, like Oscar was at De La Reina, right, who tried to bring about redemption too soon, which a streak that I have also maybe, a messianic streak. So I just want to be clear that I have to know why I'm doing this, and I'm not quite sure I know why I'm doing this beyond that, that I have to do my part in doing my own personal tikkun and the cosmic tikkun, and it's also part of my sign that was on your website. I have that printed out and I look at that and saying that is the most difficult thing I have to do. I have to live modesty and with restriction because I have a leonine power, which even comes from my dad because his name is Arya. So I have to channel this, and I'm trying very hard to do this, but I don't. I mean, I have that what you wrote printed out, that cosmic brotherhood, and I'll live in a very interesting time of history, which seems to be happening right now. I mean, we are in the middle, as far as I can tell, of redemption. But I don't quite know what my role is in this yet. So, are you here to help me to figure out what my role is? Is that why you contacted me?
First off, you contacted me. You started to make donations.
True, but I give donations to a lot of places, and no one ever asked. No one ever said, "Well, it's time that we talk," and that you wanted to teach me. No one ever did that. No one.
Okay. Well, the answer is that I could see that that's what something you needed. So yes, intuitively I knew that it was time.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Now, what to start with, a lot of what your background, because you didn't have a teacher, you learn, but there are things that you learned incorrectly. And that's what came through in the few emails that we spoke to each other through. Without going into the details of that, have you ever looked at the basic classes on my website?
So the basic classes. I look at the. I don't think so. I don't think I've listened to any recordings of yours, because the one once or twice I tried. It was the ones from New Mexico for striking, binding by striking, which were actually very useful. But it was badly recorded, and I, or rather my something. It wasn't actually badly recorded the second time I listened to it, and I said, why did it? It was completely incomprehensible the first time I listened to it, and the second time it actually came through, which I didn't understand. How is this even possible? It's the same codec. Yeah, so no, b besides the one, the binding by, you have like four, maybe even five classes on binding by striking from New Mexico from 2009 up to 2010. But besides that, I haven't,
Okay. So if you want to start with the basics of Kabbalah, we should do that. But more than likely, as we go through the alphabet, those things will come up because there's a lot of things in the basic class. It starts with an assumption that someone has no background in Judaism. So I'm not saying we should do that, but You should go through the basic classes
Okay.
on your own, and you'll have questions, and I'll be available to answer them.
Okay.
And you can either send me an email at the time you read it or the next time we speak like this.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's probably a reason you want to tell me where I'm airing. I have a basic idea where I'm airing. It is, and this is a, and this is, I guess, the basic, one of the basic criticisms. Why did we have, why did Moshe have the sacrifices there to wean, to wean the Jewish people off? But it's again, it's concretizing something that's abstract, and that the whole point of being a Jew is to move away from more, from less and less concrete to more and more abstract forms, in order to be able to do the fusion of things that seem contradictory, because there's a unity, there's an underlying unity. These are the words of the living God. And for instance, with the and I, so I never quite understood for a long time what it means there to knit together the letters, and exactly, how this descent is supposed to happen. You're supposed to, it's descent in down to the Merkava, but it seems like it comes from me, so it has to go bottom up. So I didn't quite, and I don't think I still quite understand how to deconcretize certain things about the letters. So one clue Rabbi Tzadok gave me, namely, when you do this, this when you, sacrifice yourself for Hashem in your mind, to cleanse yourself, and you do this Abba Minim, I think, what is it called, Abba, those four execution methods, the stoning and the burning.
The
yeah
stone,
yeah
the
yeah yeah
burning,
yeah yeah
the hanging, and the sword thrust.
yeah 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 the sword thrust. And he in the beginning, I did it completely wrong, right? I just went letter by letter and looked at that. And he said, no, that's not the way to do it. He said, you have to be, it has to be like, he's a martial artist, so he knew about this, but I didn't, because I'm not a martial artist. But he said, you have to be in the flow. It is, the letters are simply a vessel. They're there as a signpost and a marker. But the way that you have to actually go through this is that you have to be an energy conduit of sorts, in order, and those things are, those letters and the four methods of execution. So I'm visualizing, being thrown from a height twice my thing, and then being in a hole and stoned, and then having, someone, open my, open my, two people open my throat with two rags, and then pouring hot lead in there, and then burying me in sand to half, and then cutting my head off, and the same thing with the, the choking with two things, one hard and one soft. But that cannot be right. I'm too, it's too concrete. But I don't know how to deconcretize this and go get into that flow, that this type of surrender, this type of walking in the fire that he always talks about, that I don't know how to do, because I'm not able at this point to figure out how to deconcretize this. And probably that's the whole point. I am not supposed to figure it out. It has to come intuitively to me, right? You cannot, I cannot, I'm trying to do it on the level of Bina, but I can't do it on the level of Bina. I have to get a better intuition about this. Is this about right, what you sense too, or is this just, am I off kilter here too?
The idea is correct, but it's not that you have to do it intuitively. That's what the guide is here to help you with. When you take a Hebrew word, that is not just the word, it is the essence of the thing. So something that's physical becomes abstract when you use the Hebrew letters of that word. And when you intertwine those letters of the word with the letters of your name, which is a metaphor, but more than a metaphor, for your soul. When you intertwine those letters, what you are doing is bringing the essence of the thing, not the concrete form, but the metaphysical form, into your soul. And you absorb that energy, you integrate it into your soul through the intertwining of the letters. And it's not something that you can describe with words, as I just did. It's something you have to do. You have to experience it. So when you are have a tendency to get angry, you take the word shalom and intertwine it with your name, And you will see over time how that concentration of looking at that name, the combination of the two names intertwined, you'll see how it calms you down. And you become peaceful as at your essence, at the seed level. But you have to experience it. You have to do it. And it doesn't happen overnight. You can't do it just once and then it happens. But you bring that word into your meditations and you talk to the word, not to the word, but to the thing. So you bring shalom into your meditation, you bring peace into your meditation, and you ask it questions within your meditation, and it speaks to you. It talks, it answers your questions so that you can understand what it means to be at peace.
So when you say meditations, what is a kosher way of doing that? I mean, and I know intellectually how the Hindus do it or the Buddhists do it, but that's not our way, I don't think.
No,
So
it's not our way.
yeah, so what is how is meditation? I mean, Rabbi Tzadok has in his book, you just have to be comfortable. Doesn't matter what position you're in. You just have to close your eyes and not move. I think that he emphasized, don't physically move. But is that what you mean by meditation? And then just, have visualizations in your mind about the letters.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Do you speak physically to them with the mouth and breath, or is it just in your mind?
Breathing is very much part of Jewish meditation. So breathing correctly is very, very important. And yes, you can speak. You use your head movements like what Abu Lafia teaches. It depends. There are many different levels of meditation. So you start out at the bottom and work up. The Abu Lafia methods with head movement and speech and all of that is very much probably the highest form, less below prophecy.
Okay. The and I'll know that this is that I'm making progress if I start getting answers, like you said, it talks to me back, or do I get dreams, or
It can be any of those. It can be a dream, it can be a vision, it can be a it answers you back. It can be an intuitive thought that you ask a question in your mind and you get a thought in your mind back. Sometimes it's immediate, sometimes it's later on, but there will be an intuition that that's the answer to the question you asked. Dream questions is a tool that we use quite frequently.
That's something I wanted to ask you too. So the last case that you described, that happens to me fairly often, that there's an intractable problem, or at least a problem that has a universe of solutions, and then I get an intuition, and it turns out that intuition more and more is right, and I can't quite explain why I think it's right. It just feels right, for lack of a better word. It just clicks.
That's where you learn to trust your intuition, but you also know why your intuition lies to you when it does, because it has to do with your actions during the day.
Yes, I've noticed that. So when I was still, I mean, as I said, I came from a very lowly place, and I never understood why I had night terrors. I mean, really night terrors, but then, I understood this. Of course, that's part of the, of wasting seed comes from that, that the demons come. And then when I stopped doing that for years, the only time when they return is when I get a bit angry. And then even the Shema that I say at the before I go into bed, doesn't, because of my past, doesn't help me help seal this again, and I get nightmares. But the moment I stopped doing all the other stuff, the night terrors disappeared. Really terrible. I used to wake up completely drenched and so on. But yes, but I've noticed that always, that if I do not righteous actions during the day, and that can take many forms, but most of the time it's the anger is the worst, because the anger then destroys it all. But I noticed that in my sleep. But because I very rarely now still get nightmares. But I very rarely get any. I don't get any dreams, but my entire family gets dreams. really, I mean, very symbolic dreams. I mean, and I've thought to myself, maybe in my case it is, since we are, there's a reason why we're all together. We're probably part of some soul root from the past. Maybe, is it possible that whatever you know, little righteousness I may exhibit and do, the answers come back to my family unit and not directly to me? Is that possible?
It's very much possible.
Okay.
Well, when you say your family, are you speaking about your wife and your children, or are you speaking about your father and mother?
My wife and my children.
Okay.
Yeah. So
Yeah, it's very common for
okay.
answers to come through the your family unit.
Okay. Oh, then you know, then you can all rejoice. That's awesome, because you were right. Yeah. About 781, and that is not a single verse there that has that gematria thing. So yeah, this is, it's going to be an awesome year then. Then I'm much elated. Oh, Hashem, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. Because yeah, they have definitely dreams that that map to the Parsha, and that map, you know, in their symbolic form, you know, because of the comic books they read or the video games they play, it comes in the language that they have, you know. But if you know them, and I guess that's how Daniel did his dream interpretation, because he understood their people's psychology or whatever that was motivating them, so he understood the imagery, the language that is spoken to them comes in the imagery that you, I mean, that you possess. Good, good, excellent. Yeah, because I personally don't have, I've had, I can, I've only had in my entire life two lucid dreams, you know, when I was aware, two, maybe three, but two that I really can 100% say is, and one time I remembered to do what I was told, namely, you know, what kind of creature am I? Because I was taught that they can't lie. So when you meet one of these beings that are in a you know, from a different dimension or a different level, so to speak, you have to ask them, what do you want? And one time I did remember. So there was this thing talking to me, and I said, what do you want from me? And that guy was before friendly. Suddenly his face became extremely long. I mean, it was the weirdest thing. He says, why is your face? I mean, he's becoming, you know, sadder, and his face extremely long. Still can be, he was not saying anything, but his face became extremely long. I still don't quite know what I saw there, but that's the only time that I ever remember doing that. Otherwise, you know, sometimes I know when I have good dreams, like when I see Jewish symbolisms. You know, I'm in a, I see children studying. I think it's sort of souls of children that died too prematurely and that are taught by Eliyahu himself. You know, outside studying, and that's very nice. Or when I run around and say, oh, it's almost time for mincha, I have to go somewhere, or I'm sitting at a table and there are, you know, people studying Torah. I know, ah, that's a good dream. Or the ocean water. Although once I was in water, and I think, you know, I had one of these. This is really very odd, because this was on Rosh Hashanah itself. It was the weirdest thing. Rosh Hashanah, this shouldn't have happened at all. No, not Rosh Hashanah. This was on Pesach. Pesach night at all. The first night of Pesach, I'm there. I have this dream. I'm submerged in the water, and this woman comes. Beautiful woman, and I get a seminal emission in my dream, which almost never ever happened to me. I don't think it happened more than once or twice in my entire life, but it happened on Pesach. You know, she pulled towards me, and then I woke up. And someone says, this has to happen on Pesach in the water with a woman like that? That's the weirdest thing. So I didn't understand it. Maybe you understand it, but I didn't. But I mean, my upshot is I don't have many dreams like that, but the ones that I do have, I do remember. So that. What do you think of this? Is this normal what I have, or is this part of my klipot that I see these kind of things?
Well, the beautiful woman is Lamed Lamed, if you know
Yeah,
what that is.
yeah, yeah. But on Pesach, really? On Pesach
Yeah,
night?
especially on Pesach,
Huh.
because what is the Pesach is about freedom,
Yeah.
and what freedom do you have? The Yetzer Hara is telling you freedom is to do what you want when you want. And so that, if you look back at what you did leading up to Pesach, you will find the reason why it came.
I see. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. But I always thought we were protected on the Pesach. You don't even have to lock the door. There's no.
Well, you've said two things that are incorrect. The first thing you said is that when you meet entities in your dreams or in your visions or your meditations, that they can't lie to you, and that's false. They do lie to you. They don't always lie to you, and there are ways to determine if they're lying or not. Secondly, the other aspect is that Pesach What stops you from being affected by a normal energy of a day on Pesach is not eating chametz. But chametz is not just bread, not just items that we think of chametz. Chametz is looking into yourself. It's your ego. You have to cleanse your ego. And if you haven't done that sufficiently, then you're going to be attacked.
Okay, now, yes, Rabbi Tzadok says as much that we're driving stuff crazy to clean externally, but the main thing is doing this by thinking you have to clean your own internal chametz, I mean your own ego. That's the thing, that the outer action is simply there to, as I understood it, to jumpstart and to motivate you to do the, actually the inner chametz that has to get out. Yeah, okay, that 100%
Correct.
makes sense. Yeah, okay. So these dream entities can lie to me. Yeah? They was. Maybe I misunderstood then the teaching. Maybe it's just demons of a lower realm that if you meet them, they have to actually tell the truth. I thought I read it with the Baal Shem Tov, but maybe I may be mistaken. But it's good to know. So how can I tell? How can I force them to tell me the truth? I mean, if you can tell me, how do I? What are? I mean, I studied. I mean, I worked with it. So for normal people.
The quick answer to that is it's not a quick answer. But it's a
Okay.
fact, you have to give them a series of questions and then evaluate their answers to see if it's truthful.
Okay, maybe you can explain to me. You know that story of the De La Reyna who wanted to bring redemption
Yes.
early. Can you
Yes.
explain to me a man like that was able? I mean, who saw these entities? You know, who was warned against this? Why at the very, very last instance, when you know? I mean, a man like that surely would have known that he shouldn't give, you know, something to smell to a dog like that and not listen to him. He was forewarned on top of that. He fasted 3 days, 3 nights. I mean, he went through all this. He almost succeeded. And at the very moment, that trivial little task that he does, it seems so incongruous out of the whole thing. Someone who was able to fast 3 days, 3 nights, and be pure and do all that and be warned and was told not to do something like that, still did it. How is that possible? I mean, it never made that's the end of the story. Never made sense to me. Can you explain this to me?
I'm not sure I can explain it to you. The essence of I don't want to speak badly about the man because he was a righteous man, but a righteous man should know that by himself, even with a minion, which is what he took with him, he should know that he cannot bring the redemption by himself. It needs to be a majority of the children of Israel. And right now, the children of Israel are mixed with the Erev Rav. And that's what we should be doing, is learning how to separate ourselves from the Erev Rav. But you don't hear that being spoken about by anybody. But that's literally what the Zohar says.
Rabbi Reuven does. Yaron Reuven does. He talks, speaks about that a lot.
Rabbi Reuben is, again, I don't mean to speak badly. There's a lot of misinformation in what Rabbi Reuben teaches. And
Really?
you have to, there are other items that are correct. But you have to be able to discern which is correct and which is not. And that means listen to your intuition rather than what his words are.
I'm very glad that you told me that because I did do that because I was on the verge of doing something. Daniel, just be very careful what you're doing here because if he's wrong, you forfeit your Olam HaBa and you can never take it back what you're about to do. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go by the teaching of, you know, if you're angry with your child, don't steep over it and only then do something. Just think about it. And I never did it. And I'm glad I didn't because something didn't seem right about this. So thank you for telling me this because that has actually it kept me from destroying my soul.
If
Okay.
someone calls themselves a rabbi in our generation, the Zohar is very clear. That soul is Erev Rav.
I thank you for also saying it, because I got the Ramban in his disputation when was this in the court of Aragon, when he was called to the Epicurus, Jew, they're saying that the Talmud is they want to dis I mean it's a famous disputation, 1289 or
Right.
so,
I'm
right?
familiar with it.
You're familiar, right? Yeah, he says that, and he said there, Rabbi, I mean smicha, classical smicha has been ex has, doesn't exist anymore since I think the 3rd or 4th century, and I looked it up and I said, wow. And then Rabbi Breitowitz said once in his lecture, every rabbi is a fake rabbi. He says it. You know Rabbi Breitowitz? In his very jovial way, he says that. As
No,
an yeah.
I don't.
You don't. He's he's a famous. Well, he went to Harvard Law. He had 4 years of law. He taught at the University of Maryland College Law. Orthodox rabbi. He did Aliyah 2 or 3 years ago. He's a very educated man, and at home in both realms. Halacha and the Gentile laws of the United States. So he said every rabbi today is a fake rabbi, and I looked it up and it says, wow, you're actually right. So you're saying that's a telltale sign. That's why, well, but I mean,
The Zohar goes even deeper and says that the soul of these people who call themselves rabbi are Erev Rav.
wow.
But that's not to mean that you cannot learn from them. But you have to be discerning. You have to be listening to your intuition and recognize when your intuition is lying to you. And it's a difficult path to walk, but that's how you stay in the central column.
Okay.
That's how you stay in balance.
This explains, thank you very much. This explains a whole lot of things. Because I'm a, you know, I support both Rabbi Mitzray or Rabbi Misai and Rabbi Reuven, because with, I mean, they're practically the only ones who talk really forcefully that one shouldn't spill seed and to do kiruv and try to get people in their indefatigable energy, and really professionals. And also, but there are a couple of things that always bother me. Like, one thing that I learned is, you should not speak badly, right? Because you bring that into existence. So and I hear that says no, you shouldn't be. You should say, Tzad Hashem, everything will be fine. We'll do teshuva, all evil decree, even written in blood. Pesach shows that can be revoked. Hashem will come down and break that seal made in blood. But so you shouldn't be talking about the downfall of the United States. You shouldn't be talking negatively that we're going to get pogroms. You shouldn't be doing that because it people listen to you and it creates fear, and that fear manifests. It's not a good thing to do that. And so that's something that bothered me when I hear that, when I hear them, and I'm glad now that you're telling me this, because I learned a lot from both of them. I mean, I cannot say I'm not indebted to them, but there were certain things that didn't seem right from what I knew from other sources. So I triangulated. Okay, so.
You may hear things from me that you don't think are correct. Your intuition says otherwise. Doesn't mean that I'm wrong. It just means that for this particular issue, everything is relative to your soul. If anybody says that this is the only thing, you have to listen to your intuition. It may be right for you, wrong for me, but that doesn't mean that we're both wrong. It means that we're both right. It's right for you, but it's not wrong for me, means I'm right about that for me. So that's what I teach. One of the basic classes I teach is called relativity. And it's one of the later ones after you've gone through it. So I recommend you go through them. Some of them will be very much what you've already gone through, and you have a background, and it doesn't make sense to you because it's written for people with no background. But as you get into the later classes, after classes 8, 9 or so, you'll find that those classes will still have meaning to you. And even the early ones, there'll be things that you will hear you already know, but you'll hear it from a perspective that's more oriented to me, and that you may, because it's different from the way you've learned it. Because I do not teach religion, I teach spiritual truths. Religion is a corruption in a certain sense. Why do I say it's a corruption? Because there's no word in the Torah for religion. There's no, dati is the Hebrew word for religion. But there is dat, but there's no word for religion, because religion are people who said, this is what I know. And as soon as you understand that this is coming from someone who says, I know, they're coming from a place of ego. And so there may be truth there, but there is also lies. It's just something for you to think about.
Okay. Rabbi Tzedok says something very similar.
Yes, he teaches that.
Yeah.
He teaches that. I've been studying with Rabbi Tzedok for about 20 years, and I've seen an evolution in his teaching. I used to describe him as a left column soul, because he was very adamant, very, very strong in his evaluations. He's less so now. And this is true of everyone. As you grow older, you become more oriented to mercy and to love, chesed.
It's true. It happened to me also. It happened to me, yeah. And also now he's more balanced, because he, for 2 or 3 years now, has a new wife. And I think that also did him very, very...
Very much so. Very much so.
Yeah. So...
What I'd like to do for the last few minutes of our class, can you open up another window and go to yeshem.com?
Yes. Can you answer me one question, perhaps, on Rabbi Tzedok? Why is he called Bar Tzedok? So he once alluded to that he would explain it, but why is he not Ben something, but he's Bar Tzedok? And I thought he cannot be part of the Tzaduki, that can't be it. But is he part of the lost priestly class that somewhere still ministered to a version of the Torah in inner earth? No. So what does that mean?
Bar is Aramaic for Ben. It's Aramaic for son.
Oh.
And so if his background is Sephardi, and they would use Bar rather than Ben many times. So when they immigrated to wherever, the family took on the name Bar Tzedok, because that's what they were normally would call themselves.
I see. So it's very simple. Okay. Wow. Yeah. So when I had I'm on your website, by the way. When I had a Jewish Orthodox guy I met in a hotel, I mean, Hashem always brings people together to teach. He was the one who said, Daniel, you should probably look at the Sefer Elimelech. Noam Elimelech, which I really very much enjoy. Yeah.
Yes.
He looked at what I was reading and he said, Daniel, you have to, especially with the Zohar, he said, you have to go to the mikveh before you do all this. You cannot just read it like that. And I have up until October, I can go into the ponds that I have here, but I live in Vermont, so afterwards it's a bit cold. I mean, I once went in December and the ice cut me, so I'm not doing that again. But I wash my hands like the Ben Ish Chai. Is that enough if I wash my hands 40 times like the Ben Ish Chai? To purify before I study that?
Let me answer that when I come back, because I have a diuretic that's calling my name.
Sure.
So give me 3-4 minutes. We'll leave it open.
Okay.
And I apologize for that.
No problem.
Baruch Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Asher Yetzar Et Adam B'Chochma Uvara Go Nekevim Nekevim Halulim Halulim Galui Bidui Lifnei Kisei Kevodecha She'im Yisatem Echad Mehem O Im Yipateach Echad Mehem Yafshar Li Kayem Afilu Shachat Baruch Adonai Rofei Kol Basar Mafli Lasot
Amen. That's the first prayer I taught my children.
Good. It's one they should use often.
I have it hanging everywhere. I tell everyone to do this.
So to answer your question, there are various ways to do a mikveh. The one you mentioned is one of those ways, and it's appropriate, and it will work. Another one is to measure the volume of water that a shower runs, that your shower runs. Once you know that volume of water, you can calculate what is 40 seah.
Yeah.
And as long as you take that shower that long, it's not as good as a regular mikveh, but it's adequate.
Okay.
And for a man, you can do a mikveh in a pool, in a swimming pool.
Yeah.
A woman, it's insufficient for, but for a man, it will work.
Okay. Okay, I'm glad. I'm glad that, I knew, I read about those methods too, you know, also with the, you know, 12, you know, take the, I didn't know you could do it freestanding with the shower. I thought I had to put it in a vessel and then pour the vessel over myself. I didn't know I could just do it with standing under the shower, but okay.
Standing under the shower works.
Okay, great. Okay, fantastic. Yeah.
Generally speaking, it's about a 30-minute shower.
Okay.
But it depends on your water pressure, what your volume of water coming.
Oh wow, it's that long. Oh wow. Yeah, no, we have our own well, but I have to measure. I have to measure the 40 seah. If I may ask you again, the first time we spoke last week, you said after the Ana B'Koach, I look at the 72 names, one triplet at a time, from right to left. And after that, I say the Baruch Shem Kivod Machto Leolam Ve'ed. Is that correct like that? Yeah.
Let us go to the website. We'll walk you through that thing very quickly, okay?
Okay.
Because you need to have some background. So I'm going to minimize this so I can get to it. Do you have it open?
I do. I put a link in the chat. I wanted to ask you if that's the class link.
Okay.
You sent me it. Okay, yes, I have it open, yeah.
So now click on the Revealed Wisdom.
Yeah. Okay, so yes. That's
scroll down about an inch.
Yeah.
And you see a matrix, right?
Yes.
Okay. Those are all the classes. The left column is the basic classes. So if you go to class number 4, that's where you will find the two charts of the 72 names. It's at the bottom of that page. When you open that up, you'll see two different charts. Those are the two that you need to scan right to left, top to bottom.
One has your name on it. Should I replace your name with my name?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. The reason, if you want, I can prepare a chart for you with your name. And I believe there may already be one that you can find on the website. But if not, I like to have people scanning the one without their name for at least, generally I say 6 months. For you, it's probably 3 months, because you need to have consistency, and then you can add your name.
Is there any particular kavana I should have when I do this? Do I have to,
you should always have kavana for anything you do.
Yeah.
So the answer is, the ultimate kavanah is you want to get closer to Hashem.
Okay.
You want to minimize your ego. These are overall kavanot.
Okay.
Now, if you go to, in that matrix, you go to row 7, and the second column from the left, you'll see for the Hebrew letters.
5, 6, 7. The Dalet and the Lamet and the Yod, that one?
No, it says the...
In the original one. Oh, sorry, I thought in the 72 names one. Sorry.
No, it's a different. Go back to the matrix.
Yeah.
Everything starts with the matrix.
That's funny. Because of the movie. Yeah. Okay.
Yes, of course. I agree. But if the left column is the basic classes.
Yeah.
The second column from the left is the more advanced classes. And then the other two classes, you can look at the titles. They're a little bit more mixed. But the classes we should start with is this series of Aleph Bet classes handouts.
Aleph Bet classes handouts. Where is that?
In row 7.
Row 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Ah, see, there we go. Yeah, got it. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, the first class, we can start. We probably won't finish, but we'll go as long as we can. You need to get a sense of what you want. So if you want to go faster, we can go faster. If you feel that we want to stop and talk in terms of questions and answers, we can do that. So it's really, you need to describe to me what you're looking for.
Okay. How do I know that whatever I decide is actually motivated by something pure and not by ego or pride? Or, you know, how would I know that I'm making actually the right decision?
I'm going to tell you a very big secret. If something happens in the physical world, then it's part of the plan of creation. What that actually means is there's no such thing as it being incorrect. You ask a question, it means you're going to get an answer. The question is, is it a longer part of the process or a shortening of the process? But if you ask the question, there's a reason for it. And it cannot be that it's coming from a negative aspect, because there is no such thing as negative aspects.
Okay.
From a human looking up to God, we see things separated. We see things positive and negative. From God looking down on us, He just sees the three columns in unity. So, yes, there is negativity. And so I'm not saying there isn't. But the negative is an aspect of creating unity.
I understand.
Deep concept. And so, it's very difficult for people to understand it.
Well, there's the long short way and the short long way.
Exactly.
I used to tell my children, you know, creation is going to move to its inexorable end. Now you have the choice. You're like floating on the Amazon River. You can float. You can swim against the Amazon River, and it'll be painful and exhausting, and you'll still lose because the Amazon River is stronger and will float you there. Or you can swim with the Amazon River, and it'll be pleasant on your back, and you can be and you'll still. You'll get to the destination either way. The only question is, how painful do you want to make it? It is much better if you actually go with the flow as you're supposed to, and that's just a metaphor, right? For you know, doing the right thing according to the Torah, as we Jews have to do, because in the end, we'll all. I mean, if not in this lifetime, it's one of the reasons I did the teshuvah. I thought this actually through logically. I thought, you know, Daniel, if this is all true, then actually I have zero claim on Hashem, and if this is all true, then then if I don't do it with all the capabilities I have now and all the advantages I have now, I may come back and be in a very, very worse position, and I'll still have to do it. So I may as well just do it now, because I, you know, if that's the plan, who am I to say, you know, I don't want to be part of that plan, because it won't help me anyway. I would have to come back and do it anyway. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So we're just going to start
yep.
this first section. This is the first of a series of classes teaching the essence of the letters of the alphabet. This essence will include teaching of the four aspects of the letters of creation. This means we will deal with the trope, which are the cantillation marks, the shape of the letters, the sound of the letters, the vowels, the gematria, the letter substitutions known as noterican, the astrology relationships, and many other attributes of the letters. This series of classes will take at least 26 weeks, doing one class a week, and probably more. The more one learns about the letters, the more one will find the teachings of Kabbalah will manifest in their lives. This is not logical, since in our world of separation, we perceive things separately. One metaphor that will assist you in dealing with this process is the movie The Matrix. Remember the scenes where the computer code would appear as the walls or background of the scene. This is actually the way our world does work. The letter sequences are how we perceive physical matter. When someone sees an illusion instead of the truth, the sequences were corrupted by the negative system. This is really what the war between good and evil is all about. An example of this is when people become fat from eating too much food. On one level, this is dealing with not controlling our desires and our reactions. On another level, the food should never cause harm to a human being, one of the kings of creation, one of the controllers of creation. In order for food to allow someone to become fat, the letter sequence must be changed by the negative system, and the human's normal immune system must be limited by their actions in order to cause the human pain, discomfort, and chaos. These are all metaphors for the mechanics of the physical world. If you want to really learn about the letters, start with the handout of the letters with their root vowels and the MP3 recordings of the sounds. The purpose of these handouts and recordings is homework for my students. This is not busy work. It has a specific goal, which I will not explain yet. As both the Zohar and Talmud teach, the reward is according to the effort. Hope you make the effort. The choice is yours. All I will say is, in my opinion, the effort is worth doing. You can see two links. Both links are active at this point. One is the sound of the letters, and I don't really utilize all of the Yemenite sounds. The ones that I know are clean and pure from the Yemenite sounds, I've included, but otherwise, no. A perfect example is the letter Gimel, which in the Ashkenazi, they don't identify that the Gimel has two sounds.
Yeah.
Whereas in the Yemenite, it is a gi and a g.
Yeah.
The homework chart consists of 22 lines of the Aleph Bet, from Aleph to Taf. And then the next line starts not back with the Aleph, but it starts with the Bet. And then you go through to the Aleph at the after the Taf. This process of sounding out the letters with their root vowels, The root vowel means when you spell the name of the word of the letter in Hebrew, the first letter is always the letter. So an aleph, the root vowel is a. The bet, the root vowel is bay, a. The root vowel of the gimel is g or g. But each of those are words, not just letters. And when you see a word in the Torah, when you see a letter in the Torah, you have concealed letters and revealed letters. The revealed letter is the letter you see. The concealed letter is the rest of the spelling out of that letter, of that word.
So this chart, I don't have the chart yet. It says not active yet.
Click on the link.
Yeah, it's a sound file, it seems like it.
The first one is a sound file.
Okay.
The second one?
Is also a sound file.
Let me see what I have there. Yeah. It's been a while.
So, first of all, I completely agree with you because that's basically how I learned German and English and French, by rote, writing letters, so everything repeats itself, and I get a glimpse of how it was.
Hold on a sec.
Yeah.
Okay, it looks like it's a duplicate. I will send you a link to the handout because it's in the Sefer Yetzirah classes, and I'll find it and send you a link later today.
There's a teacher, I think comes from a prominent Brazilian Jewish family in Los Angeles. He had about the Hebrew letters. He's a Sephardic guy, speaks like 6-7 languages, very interesting. I forgot his name, but he had 3 courses on the Hebrew letters. And he said that because of Hebrew word roots, either 2-letter roots or 3-letter roots, depending on which school that you subscribe to, you can tell, like what you said, that the Hebrew letters and words are not just symbolic representation, they actually present the essence. So you can, the first letter of a word says, gives its head, its essence. The second letter says, you know, to whom it's taking place or where it's taking place. And the third letter says in what way it's taking place. And from that you can, that's for instance how Adam HaRishon could figure out the names of all the animals because he saw like a cat, you know, he saw the cat was burying its waist, so we could call it a chatul, or you saw a sus, a horse, because the horse, you know, gallops, you know, like, is that accurate, what I learned? Is that correct? That the positions of the letters of the word give you hints as to the nature of being, of whatever it describes?
I have not heard that. Intuitively, the answer is, it is somewhat correct, but not 100% correct. What he didn't say, a 2-letter root is an Aramaic language.
Huh.
3-letter or 4-letter root is Hebrew.
Moment, there's a 4-letter roots that exists? 4-letter
there
roots?
There are 4-letter roots. They're rare, but they are there.
Hmm. Good to know. Okay.
So one of the ways to translate a letter, Aleph, the energy of the Aleph is unity, oneness. The Lamed is teaching, because the word Lamed means a teacher in Hebrew. The pay means the your mouth. It's the Hebrew word for your mouth, pay. The unity of the mouth, or teaching the mouth unity. That's the essence of the word Aleph. Did that meet what this teacher said those other two letters represented? I don't think so.
Well, let's see. Well, I mean,
The
I could.
second letter is supposed to be what?
Let me make sure that this. The to whom it takes place or where it takes place. And the third one is the manner in which it takes place. Whereas the third letter is not strictly required, but the first two letters are the most important ones. So the first letter is the essence of what it is. The second letter says to whom it takes, the one upon which it's acted upon or where it takes place. And the third letter is the manner in which it's done. So it seems like that would actually work, right? The Lamed, is a con. I mean, Lamed is one of the few letters that go from heaven down to earth, right? The coming down, and you have to actually.
But the word Lamed means teacher.
Right, but the letter itself doesn't it bridge heaven and earth? Isn't that in Rabbi Ginzburg's book that one of the things of the Lamed is that it's
One
one of
of the
the
essences of the Lamed is that it connects to the higher level. It connects to a level above Zeir Anpin. It connects to Bria, to get connects to Bina. That's why it goes above the line in the Torah. It does not, and it and therefore there's a channel, because if you are writing a lamed, you're literally writing a kaf and a vav on top. And the kaf is a hook. The kaf, excuse me, the vav is a hook. The vav is a channel to bring what it connects to above down into Zeir Anpin, where the hand, which is the kaf, the palm of your hand. So we will learn a lot of things like this, but we don't have time really
Okay,
today
yeah,
to continue.
sure.
Let me read this next paragraph, and then we'll stop here.
And the reason that you have to read it to me is not that I read the text itself, because it is actually you have to actually read it to me because I have to hear it from your breath in your mouth into my ears. Is that correct?
Because while you're reading, while you're looking at the words, that's one level of information. But if you hear it, that's a second level of information. If you're the one doing the speaking, that's a third level. So it's not that I need to do it, but you need to do it to yourself so that you get all three levels.
I see. Okay.
So if you want to read this next paragraph, go ahead.
The one after a good start.
Yes.
Should I read it as slowly as you do? Because I normally read fast. Or should I do it slowly? Should I try to make slowly? Okay, let me try. A good start to relating to the letters.
It's called experiment. You decide for yourself.
Okay. I had to unlearn a lot of things because I used to speed read because I studied a lot of things, but you can't do it in Hebrew. You have to do exactly the reverse. So it's a very I have to start being much slower. A good
Yes.
start to relating to the letters comes from the teachings of Rabbi Avraham Cook, the Song of Song of Songs. He was the chief Ashkenazi rabbi in Israel during the First World War, which he spent in England, unable to return to Israel. He also was instrumental in causing the Balfour Declaration and in between war years. Here's a translation of some of his writings related to the letters and wonders of the divine name. This comes from the Kabbalah Online website in Tzfat. The Hebrew letters
Okay.
are. Yeah, okay.
This is where we should stop, because
Okay.
it's the beginning of his writings. You'll find that all of my classes, I tend to utilize the sages and then make comments within their writings to help explain to the people who don't have background. So you'll find those comments beneficial, or you won't, but what you're reading, and you feel free to go forward and read all of these classes. There's nothing that you're prohibited from reading. The question is, do you need to do it in a slow manner where you have the opportunity to utilize the information and make it part of your life? And you cannot do that just reading it alone.
And what is that a fundamental thing that I can't do it reading it alone? Is that part of the laws of the universe that this has to be this way?
It's the way I was taught. It's the way I was taught to teach. Can I say that it's absolutely that you cannot do it by yourself? No. You can do it by yourself. But I think you will find it more beneficial to do it with me.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just wanted to confirm that. I agree with you. I was just wondering whether this is the case.
You read this whole handout by yourself now, and then next week when we meet again, we'll read it together, and you'll learn things that you didn't learn in reading it yourself. That happens to a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. I 100% agree. So I have no problems reviewing stuff that I learned before, because even though I didn't believe in the beginning, but then I said I'm going to take on faith because I'm not the smartest person in the world, and I have to take what the sages say. And it's right. You review something, the Gemara, 3-4 times, and then 10 times looking and says, wow, I can't believe I read this 10 times, and I studied, and I thought about it, and I didn't see this. And now I see it. So they're absolutely right. The more you review, the more actually you see stuff, more interpretations come out of that. This is absolutely true.
Correct.
And people don't have the patience or the Sitzfleisch you have to be humble to do it, because you have to study the same thing, 10 hours, one page. And most people cannot do that anymore, but they don't have the attention span to do any of that. So, yeah.
Correct.
Okay, excellent. Yes, thank you very much. I don't want to go over your time. I'm sure you have other people who are vying for your attention. Yeah. Did you go to Georgia Tech for your industrial engineering, Georgia Institute of Technology?
No, I was living in Los Angeles. I went to USC.
Oh, very nice. Viterbi School. They got just huge donations. Yeah, very nice, very nice. Ah, is that where you met Avram Hutton, Sutton, when you were in Los Angeles?
Yes.
Okay.
But he was already living in Israel for probably 20 years when I met him. I met him in like 1992 or 3.
My favorite synagogue in the whole world is in Los Angeles. It's the Iranian synagogue, the Persian synagogue.
Another one.
It's a small one. I was running. I want to go to Mincha. I says, I have to get to Mincha. Guy steps out and says, have you started Mincha? And me, I knew exactly that's where I have to be. Also because they whisper quiet. They go to the mikvah and they pray at 5 in the morning, which I love.
Correct.
And they don't talk. I love that. They're very quiet and I love that.
They don't pray at 5 in the morning. They call it, they pray at Nets.
At Nets, right. But they're there early on, right?
But it changes depending on the hour, the which day of the year, because they're trying to start the Amidah right at the moment that the sun crests the horizon.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's amazing.
I'm glad you know that shul. Yeah. Okay. Thank you much. So next time, next week at the same time?
Yes.
Okay.
And if you want to do it more often, we can. We just need to schedule the timing.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And
you have a beautiful day.
Shalom. Thank you very much. How do I address you? Do I say Kvod Rav, or do I call you? I don't know how to address you.
My name is Hanoch. That's how you address me.
Okay, Hanoch. It's one of my favorite books. I have it in French, an old 19th century translation. It's actually uncanny. The alphabet of the angels is in there. I've been trying to figure out if I can read that or not. Yeah, the book of Hanoch in French. Yeah, okay.
Well,
Hanoch, you have...
it has been corrupted, so there's 3 versions. I don't know which one you would have in French, so I can't tell you whether it's okay, that's kosher or not.
Okay.
But when you're ready, you can start, and you'll know what's right and what's wrong, because there's a lot of corruption in the book.
Okay. Do you read French?
No. Do I read it? Yes, I can read the letters and pronounce the words, but I don't speak it.
Okay.
The Zohar says that the Book of Hanoch has been corrupted, and it says be very careful with it.
Okay, yeah, I just looked at it because I took the class with Rabbi Tzedok on
right.
Hanoch, which I absolutely loved. It explained to me very much the corruption of the how it came to be the Trinity and so on of the Christian believers. I mean, that makes a whole lot of sense now, much more than I thought before. Yeah. Have you ever taken that course? It's a great course. It's, I think, 17 courses.
I did not take that one. I got bits and pieces of it, but I never got I wasn't didn't have the time to do it all.
Okay. I know you have a very beautiful day. Thank you very much for contacting me, and we'll speak soon.
You have a good week. Shavua Tov.
Shavua Tov.